Hello and welcome to Series 2 of the On The Ward podcast, the podcast featuring patients and staff living and working in a secure mental health hospital. My name is John Barry Waldron, and this series we're hoping to go more in depth with the patients, more in depth with the staff, and find out a little bit more about what life is really like on the ward. Okay, wow, so we're back for series 2 of the On The Ward podcast, but this time I'm joined by someone new. I'm with Caroline.
Hello, John.
Hello, Caroline. So, Caroline, you're a forensic psychologist, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, so what does that mean? What does forensic psychologist do?
So that essentially means that you are a psychologist, but you're... specialism is in working with people who have usually gone through the courts or committed some sort of offence in their history. So it just tends to have a different training and a different focus to clinical psychology.
Yeah, so I think before we talked about that, so some of the patients in here would have a forensic background, so would have committed crimes, but there are some who have committed no crimes and are just sectioned.
Yeah.
So they're just deemed by psychologist or psychiatrist, sorry, that they are at risk to themselves or others, so they have to stay in hospital.
Yeah, and often it crosses over in that what you would specialise in terms of forensic psychology often is around violence or the risk of violence, and then that is often what you see in secure hospitals. So it might be that people haven't necessarily been convicted of offences, but they're still displaying things, behaviours that a forensic psychologist can support them with.
I'm sure the question of risk will come up. Risk seems to be everywhere in secure settings.
Yes.
But anyway, so the last podcast we did was around February time, and a lot has happened in the world in them 6 months. So obviously we had lockdown and things like that. So how do you think that's going to affect the ward, I guess, but also just everybody outside?
I think it's just changed everything, hasn't it? It's changed the way we work, it's changed the way we think about the patients, it's changed the way we plan everything, it's changed the patients' futures temporarily, things have slowed right down, even to think about how we get patients to, for example, visit places that they might be being discharged to, that slowed right down, have meetings with people that they might be working with in the future.
And that's not even to talk about the mental health impacts of it. So obviously, you know, the patients get affected by things that happen outside as well. So I remember we were constantly having it, you know, when it first started, and it was constantly on the news and it was everywhere. And eventually the patient said, can we turn it off? Because we were getting a bit tired of the kind of the news. And I think everyone kind of got a bit drained.
I did that.
You did.
I'm still doing that.
Yeah.
I did that this morning.
But it keeps coming back up again. Like,
yeah,
I suppose we're going to have to live with it for a long time. Did you want to ask me something, Caroline?
I did want to ask you something. I was just wondering why you have decided to do a second series.
Well, I suppose, so the first series, we were focused more on kind of dispelling a few of the myths around the hospital. So it's more important to kind of show what a hospital is like, because I think people get the wrong impression of what happens in a mental health hospital. But this series, I'm hoping to focus a bit more on the patients and the staff as well, because I think staff and patients get a bit of a bad rap in the media and the press. And so I want to hone in on maybe making people a bit more human. I think, you know, whenever you see the, you must see documentaries of like Louis Theroux and what's her name? Stacey Dooley, things like that. And they're very good.
Favourites.
They are very good, and they kind of open up what these places are like. But I think sometimes they, particularly with the patients, they make them like almost like victims, almost like they're the afflicted. So it's like, oh, here's these poor patients that we need to sympathise with. And I think that's, you know, sometimes the patients here aren't like that. They are doing stuff. Obviously, they're unwell, but they're also, they're still living their lives and they're still doing lots of stuff. They're volunteering, they're doing jobs, they're making art.
And I think the documentaries you see are interesting, and they're designed for people to want to watch them who are maybe a bit nosy and want to know what kind of what life is like inside a secure hospital or this type of setting. But they don't necessarily show the day-to-day, just the day-to-day goings on and things that happen inside a hospital that actually make all of the difference. And they don't maybe show the patients who are just getting on with things. You might see patients who are really distressed, or you might see these brilliant success stories that show in one documentary how people go from being at their absolute lowest point to then being discharged and everything's brilliant. But you might not see the bits in between.
If only there was a podcast that could show a little bit about that. What do you think?
It'd be a brilliant idea, and I'd love to be part of it.
So I suppose that's the idea of this series, is to kind of show the patients a bit more in there, and particularly the staff, because again, like I say, the staff kind of get a bit bad rap.
Mm.
And I don't know if you've had the similar things to me, where when you try and explain where you work and what you do, you get a lot of strange questions, and people don't really understand what it's really like.
Yeah, somebody asked me this yesterday, actually, about what's when you're... it was a patient.
Mm.
So somebody that I'm doing some therapy with at the minute asked me, when you're at a dinner party,
mm.
all the dinner parties that I go to...
can't do anymore.
What do people do when you tell them your job?
Mm.
And I was trying to explain to him that actually it's quite annoying that people ask you questions that... I suppose sometimes shows maybe a bit of ignorance or naivety just about the type of work you do, and questions. It can either be very negative, it's like, who's the worst person you've ever met? What's the worst person you've ever seen?
Yeah.
What's the worst thing somebody's ever done?
Mm.
How many times have you been punched?
Yeah, I get that one a lot, yeah. How many times have you been attacked?
Yeah, just how bad is it? And it always tends to have quite a negative...
Mm. But I think I said in the first series, I was saying, I don't blame people for having that opinion, mm. because that's all they know. So if you look at the films and TV shows, like if you've seen Joker, have you seen that movie?
Yeah.
So he's a mentally ill guy, but obviously he turns out to be his mass serial killer murderer guy. And I think that's what people have the idea of what patients or people with mental health problems are like.
Yes, but I did love that film.
I think it was a great film. I think it was a great film, but maybe gives the wrong impression of what mental health care is like now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it gives a good understanding of how people can end up doing really bad things,
mm.
but not an accurate representation of what people in secure hospitals are like. I've never met anybody like that. I've worked in secure settings for, I don't know, maybe 10 years,
mm.
and I've yet to meet a joker.
Well, you never know. Okay, so what we're going to do, we're going to listen to a patient first,
yeah.
and then we're going to listen to a member of staff, and then hopefully I can have a chat with you about them at the end.
Okay.
So, joined by one of the patients on the ward here. How are you getting on?
I'm doing good, thanks. I'm just waiting for my supported living so I can be discharged up back into the community.
Okay, so I was just going to say, how long have you been here?
I've been in St Andrews for... just over a year. I came last August, so it's been a year.
A lot has happened in that year.
It's been quite a tough year, some parts of it. I feel I've got through the worst part of it, and things are starting to look up again for me.
Well, I think that's the thing. Like, it's been hard for everyone, obviously, COVID and the lockdown and work and stuff, but particularly for you, it was supposed to be stuck on a ward. What was the difference for you?
In a way, you sort of get used to it, because, like, to us, like, when we were talking to staff, like, they saw an understanding how we felt not being able to go out when the government locked down the whole nation.
Yeah, so interesting.
It was, like, quite interesting... what staff...
Because I remember someone said, one of the patients said, it's like, we've all been sectioned.
Yeah.
Because everyone had to stay in, and everybody had to kind of get approval to move.
So, like, just feels like, you know, you've got a bit of an understanding. Sometimes, why we get a bit, like, paid off, like, when we can't go out, because it's like...
So that's interesting, you're saying
being
that.
Stuck in one place for so long.
You're saying about going out, so maybe people don't understand. So if you want to leave, you have to get the doctor to approve it first, don't you?
Yeah, but you have to, like, earn your leave, like, get up in the mornings, take your meds, do your personal care, upkeep of your bedroom, and sessions come before your leave and stuff like that. So
what's that like? Because that's not nice, kind of having people telling you you must do this, you must do that before you do anything.
Yeah, it's really annoying, but I do try looking at it as if I was at work myself, it'd be a little bit like that, but anyway, a little bit like that.
I see,
like,
so if you're like outside, you'd have to have a job and get up.
Yeah, you still have some sort of, I don't know, like things you have to, but it's still a lot nicer being out and not.
Yeah, and hopefully you're getting out, so you're getting towards that stage where you're having lots of leave now, so you're going out maybe 2-3 times a day sometimes.
Yeah.
And what are you doing on your leave?
I go and get my nails done, I get my waxing done, I get buy clothes, toiletries, like essentials and stuff, so yeah.
And walking, you're enjoying your walking?
I'll enjoy my walking, I went for a walk this morning, yeah.
It's nice, a bit cold out there.
Yeah.
So I suppose if we go back to the start a little bit, so how did you come to be in here?
I was in another hospital. I had an incident one evening which took me to long-term seg. And I wanted to move hospitals because I'd been there 2 years and I felt I needed a fresh start and a new change. So I come here. Yeah. So.
And did you feel, so you mentioned about an incident or something, you said there was lots of stuff building up at the time. Was lots of
I was waiting for my supported living. It was like there was no decision actually being made.
Yeah.
The social worker was only looking at that supported living. She wasn't trying to get me assessed for any others, and it just got really lengthy in the end. And
so you're just kind of being delayed and put off.
I got let down quite a lot by some of the psychiatrists and stuff like that. So
and how did you like end up in hospital in the first place, I guess? Because you said you might be in supported accommodation before or something.
Yeah, I was in supported accommodation. And I just found out that they stopped my contact with my children, and I went out, got totally drunk, come back kicking off, and they evicted me. So I was homeless for a bit, and then come back into the system.
But hopefully, like, now you've learned a few more ways to cope with it, or kind of talk a little bit more about when you're struggling a little bit. So you felt that maybe, because it's a bit strange, because maybe the circumstances affected your mental health.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So there was lots of things happening all at once. Maybe it just got a bit too much, maybe.
Yeah.
And you said there was one incident that set you off, I think, or something.
Yeah, it's like, I thought, oh, I'll go and have the one beer, and then it turned out to be like 8, and it was just...
We've all been there. I suppose that's the thing that people might not understand, that people in hospital aren't allowed to drink. And
I was like homeless for about 4 weeks. It was like January time, so that's quite cold.
Yeah, that's been horrible. It's been really hard.
Yeah. I got smoking spice, and I got drunk, kicked the police station door, threatened a social worker, and that's...
That'll do it,
called
probably.
The mental health and put me on a section 2. Then that was 3 years ago, so...
Can I ask you... Question, so do you think it's helped being on section or not? And I don't think there's any right answer.
In a way, it can help being on section because you can discharge yourself on impulse. And that would be probably homeless. But in a way, it's just horrible not having your own rights to your own life, do you know what I mean? So
so when you're sectioned, everything's kind of controlled for you.
Yeah,
and it must be hard, like you said, you've got to do all these things before you can even leave. And maybe if you weren't on section, you might have been out quicker.
But
it's hard, isn't it? I don't know, but you're hopefully, like I said, you're doing really well now.
Yeah,
and you're having all your leave, and so you're hoping to go to another placement soon.
Yeah,
where are you hoping to go?
I'm hoping to go to Southend. It's called Choice Housing, but I haven't heard nothing about that, so it may not be in Southend. They may look elsewhere. I'm not really sure what they're doing.
Again, probably with the bloody COVID thing, everything got slowed down, I think.
Yeah.
And it's the same happened to you, so everything's kind of...
Yeah, it's all up in the air at the moment.
Anyway, is there anything else you would like to say?
Just stay positive. And just remember we're all going through what's going on at the moment together.
And do you think that's what's helped you, is staying kind of positive? So what have you got in your mind that's kind of kept you going, I suppose?
My children.
Yeah.
Getting out of hospital, trying to get, like, thinking about work and college and my driving licence and housing and just properly settling down. And
You mentioned about a job. Have you got any idea what you might like to do for work?
I'd like to do catering.
Yeah, okay.
I want to do some part-time work. I want to just go for the job in Aldi's or something on the tills for a bit, just part-time, just to...
I think that's important, isn't it? Just to have, like, a routine.
Yeah, just a purpose to get up and stuff like that, and, like, get into fitness and, you know, like, hobby. I want to, buy old furniture and, like, refurnish it all and make it my own.
What do they call it? Upcycling.
Yeah.
Make it posher and sell it on.
Yeah.
You never know, you could be on Dragon's Den making millions. But that's really good, and I hope it really goes well for you.
Thank you.
And I'm going to let you go because you need to go out.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, John.
Thanks. So I'm joined by Osman from the ward. Hello, Osman.
Hello, John.
So you work on a PQ ward. So what is a PQ ward?
PQ is a short term, or if you like, the acronym for Psychiatric Intensive Care Unit.
Yes.
We look after people who are in the acute distress phase.
My ward is more of a longer term. So the patients of my ward would stay for months, sometimes years. But your guys would sometimes be in for weeks, sometimes days. You know, if they get a quick turnaround, they'll be out.
Yeah.
And I suppose that brings its own challenges because, like you said, they're in the acute phase, so they'd be very unwell, very distressed. But you guys managed to turn them around quite quickly.
Oh yeah, because the treatment package is completely different to you guys.
Yeah.
I know we use psychology.
Yeah. So a lot of the time, so the patients that come in are really, really unwell, so kind of physically aggressive and...
Wow, very, very aggressive, John. Very aggressive. They are displaying very active psychotic features of their symptoms. Mm. They're very paranoid. They are very deluded, they are very grandiose, and the paranoia can come in different forms. They can be paranoid about you looking at them, they hallucinate, and that one might sort of just trigger some aggressive behavior.
So sometimes what happens is these patients maybe have stopped taking their meds or the meds aren't working, so when they come in, sometimes we have to give them meds.
Yeah. Most of them come in on the ward because the basic criteria, they have to be on a section.
Right, so they're all sectioned?
They're all section patients.
Okay.
And when they're on section patients, so it means treatment, I wouldn't say it's not negotiable, but they have really to have their medication.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really powerful legislation. So if we feel they need the medication,
yes.
Because sometimes part of the problem with the illness is they won't recognize they're unwell.
Yes.
So they won't see that they need the medication. So then sometimes we have to, unfortunately, forcibly give them the medication.
Because their admission is being precipitated by non-compliance with medication. So coming here, we if you like, we have to sort of restart that medication regime, which is not a very easy thing. It's very challenging because the insight is not there for them to run the medication. The insight is not there for them to be in an enclosed environment. Mm. The insight is not there on the benefit of medication.
Yeah.
And they are paranoid, some of them, just being in that enclosed thing. So all these things put together comes out to be a big challenge for us. But
we sit with them,
forge that relationship with them, and try to talk to them so they can actually open up and bring in that trust in them, develop that trust.
Because like you said, that's hard when a lot of them might have this paranoia.
Yes.
They don't want help from anyone.
Yes.
And particularly not a nurse who they think is going to give them medication. So you have to, you're saying, try and get down to them on their level.
Yeah. Well, that's why most of the nurses on my ward, there's a way where they can forge that trust.
Mm.
Because... John, for me, I think when you build that trust with your client, you can actually do a lot. Or that's the beginning of whatever therapy you're going to give to that patient.
Yeah.
If that patient doesn't trust you, you haven't formed that bond with him, it's going to be very challenging.
It is hard, I guess, because you don't have the time to build them relationships. Obviously, the patients that we have, you know, sometimes, like, say, months or years, so we get to know them quite well, and their ins and outs, whereas you guys, it's a very short kind of...
Yep.
stuff. Yeah. But I suppose the positive that you get is you get to see them get better quite rapidly.
Yep.
So you're saying they don't have insight, they don't have, they sometimes are paranoid.
Right.
And then very, very quickly they'll turn that around and become kind of well again.
I think that's the motivation about the job we do down there, John.
Mm.
Because we can actually see our feel, or we can see how they progress within a short time.
Yeah.
You go home, you feel motivated. See, I've done something good.
Yeah.
I love working PQ. I think loving me PQ, especially with male guys. And I really miss them, John, when I was sick.
Unfortunately, you had COVID and you contracted it right at the very start.
Yeah.
So you've gone home on a Thursday.
Yeah.
You're feeling very unwell.
Yeah.
By the time it's got to Sunday.
Sunday.
It's serious.
Serious. My saturation just gone down. I was seriously coughing. I was I was having that temperature. Mm. And when I cough, I feel fire in myself. You know, my chest was burning.
Mm.
You know, I was in some excruciating pain.
Right.
So I get down to A&E and... well, I called them actually. They came and picked me up, took me to the hospital.
And what was that like? Were they all wearing masks?
Everybody was wearing masks, because at that time, as long as you have those, you start showing those symptoms, you're definitely a COVID, even though they've not been tested. So basically, I went in there to A&E, test my blood, do all what they can do, do my X-ray, and my chest was full of mucus, and you can see the COVID in this joint. Yes. And right from there, I was admitted. Overnight, I deteriorated again. My saturation just went down.
Mm.
And then they decided to send me to ITU.
Right.
Luckily, I went to ITU.
So ITU is intensive care.
Intensive care unit.
Yes. Yeah.
I went there, and then they put me on a CPAP. Oxygen.
What's the CPAP?
CPAP, oxygen therapy.
Yes.
Which I had. That's the first stage actually for COVID treatment while you're in ICU. Mm-hmm. From there now, they will do a ventilator. And after ventilator, then they put you on tubes. Luckily for me, I was only on the first therapy which I got on the CPAP.
It must be scary just being in a hospital room with lots of other patients who have all got COVID.
Yes. Yes, John.
John, what was that like?
I've never been admitted.
Mm.
And that was my first time me being admitted. But I would say my training as a nurse has really helped me.
Right.
You know, because it sort of gave me that strength in me. Say, yes, Usman, you can do it. You know these things. You've learned about them. You've helped people who are in a very difficult phase in your life. Think about the ugly world where you work. Think about the difficult patients you work with. You know, so develop that emotion in you.
Mm.
You know, develop that strength. So I think that just kept me alive. So I spent about 4 days there, and then I was discharged. But John, I have to tell you, the thing is the relationship you get when you're a patient and the nurse who looks after you. You know, as I started earlier on, I was telling you, most of the time I was on the other side wherein I deliver care.
Yeah.
But this time around, I'm actually receiving care.
Yeah, yeah.
And you see the strain.
Mm.
Sometimes the patient, they have to endure when they want help. I was down in the ITU. Maybe I will need help.
Mm.
I will try to call the nurses, but the nurses are busy.
Mm.
Very busy. Say, I'll come and do. And all those things, you just have to, you as a patient, you have to accommodate them.
And I suppose, so how's that affected you on the ward? So when you're working yourself, I suppose you recognize, because you've been the patient.
Yes.
And sometimes the nurse is really busy and they're trying really hard.
Yes.
But people still need help.
Yes. Know? And that has really, I think, made me to sort of modify my training or modify my delivery of care.
Yeah.
Because I see them as I see myself.
Back then, there was lots of people dying, you know, from this illness. So I don't know what it was like in your ward, but were there lots of other patients that were a lot worse off? Or
John, people were dying everywhere. I was I was on Bay 27. And if I can remember, all those guys who were around me, they died.
What?
Yes.
So they just passed away.
They passed away, John. So I was the only one for a while who was actually there, who they haven't moved. I think we have very few of us who are actually discharged.
Mm.
Very few of us, John.
I suppose I'm intrigued as well about the mental side of it. But I remember you said to me about you, sometimes you get paranoid that
yes.
you catch it again.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're very like kind of...
yeah. Well, you get scared. You get yes. scared because what the media are portraying to us, or the every the information we're getting from the media, we are not immune. So even though you had it, you are not yes. immune to COVID.
Mm. So how do you feel about that? So you must be one. You're obviously a bit worried and paranoid, I guess.
Yeah.
But two, you'd be at the back of mind. You're thinking that because obviously the first time you got it was very serious. You get it again. That could be.
Can be difficult. Difficult.
But so how do you find it coming to work? So obviously you're surrounded by patients, surrounded by staff, surrounded by people, potentially, and any one of these people could be carrying it, you know, unwittingly, and maybe pass it on to you.
Yeah, to be honest, when I came back, and even before me returning back, I was very, very interested in what the trust has actually put in place.
Right.
Okay? And I'm impressed, you know. The guidelines they put in place,
wearing PPE,
the masks, they give you 3 masks or 4 masks every time you can change them, you know, and you have this spacing where we can walk. And people, their awareness is there every day on the internet when you open your laptop. Their information about COVID, you read about them. So the awareness is there. We get this awareness. And I have to say, if I should commend, which I will do, most the trust really helped me in the sense.
How did they help you?
Well, one, they made me feel I'm part of a community, part of a society, because when I got sick, I was unable to even let my manager know that I was sick.
But you couldn't
talk? I was in hospital by then because I was meant to come on Wednesday. But I think my wife found a way of communicating with my manager and who I think I owe so much. And you won't believe, John, since then, my manager, let me just call his name, Ross. You know, he just become a family friend to me. Even when I was in hospital, was calling my wife every day just to find out. So the point is, he asked my wife if they have any, if they need anything in the house, so they can buy it and deliver it to the house. Things like milk, things like food, those kind of, you know, John, those kind of things. And that really, 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 it's really shot my mind, you know.
Because there are things you don't think of.
I don't think of how, and I came on, when I came out again, I got a card from HR. I got a personal letter from Kate. I've never met her. I think she's the chief executive.
Yeah.
You know, I got a very lovely letter from her.
But I suppose it's important that, so things like work and money and things like that, they kind of are irrelevant when you're in this middle of something like that.
Yeah. The little things like what Ross did for me and what chief executive to write me a letter, that makes me feel, I just feel, it was good for me really to choose St. Andrews to come to work.
Yeah. So your lessons that you learned is one, probably first is don't get it because it's very, 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 very bad. And two, I'd say, is it's given you, strangely, you're saying it's given you a more positive outlook on life.
Yes. Life and even my delivery of care, John.
Yeah.
And the support really I got from the top guys, you know, like Katie. I hope one day I will have the opportunity of meeting her.
I'm sure you will. I'm sure you will. Thank you so much.
Well, John, thank you very much.
Okay, so we're back. Wow, that was 2 really good interviews there, so the patient and the staff. I thought a couple of the themes that came out, or interesting things that came out of it, was the patient was saying that we kind of, as staff, because of the lockdown, we all kind of know a little bit what it's like to be sectioned now. And And the staff member who was talking about his experience of having COVID, you know, it was really serious, could have died. But his experience of being in a ward with a nurse rushed off their feet and him kind of being a better nurse because of his experience.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot to learn from being able to put yourself in the shoes of the patients that we work with.
Mm.
And possibly, definitely actually, a lot of the things that we've experienced in the pandemic have enabled us to just think about what it's like to have our freedom restricted, our liberty restricted, and that's not nice at all. And it's really not nice. People hate being told what to do, don't they? And they don't like not knowing. It causes us anxiety when you know there's another news briefing coming and you're going to be told something else about what you can and can't do.
You can't go down the pub, you can go down the pub. And I suppose, like you said, our patients have to live that every day. And sometimes we forget a little bit that they are here against their will. And they don't always want to be here.
They have to come in a room full of people. So maybe in a ward round, not at the minute because of social distancing, but there'll be maybe 6-7 professionals in that room and have to come in and say, can I please go to town to do my shopping next week? It isn't a big ask, is it? But even the process of having to do that, having to ask for that, must provoke so much anxiety and things like that. I think maybe we forget sometimes as professionals how difficult that is.
But like I said, it's interesting that we've all gone through this experience of the lockdown to a certain degree. Obviously, the patients have been more affected by it, but we've all had to kind of stay indoors a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're saying it is good that we can all have this communal experience, I guess. We can bring that kind of experience to work.
Yeah, because I suppose in our lifetime, and it's the only time since I've been working that something has happened that's happened to everybody, absolutely everybody. I can't think of any other examples, and something that impacts staff as much as it does patients, and where everybody is at a disadvantage, and that I think is quite helpful in terms of having a shared experience.
I think you're right. I think it's strangely, when we did the lockdown episode, we were talking about at that time the patients and the staff had kind of all come together, so we were all kind of like trying their hardest to try and make life carry on and do the best we could, and so yeah, I think we did kind of it was good in that way, I guess. I mean, how have you found it? Do you don't mind the social exclusion or staying away from people?
I have found it, I suppose there's been ups and downs. So I think it's just the difficulty of having aspects of your life that are no longer in your control. Whether schools are open, whether you're able to do this, whether you're able to meet with family members, and somebody else making those decisions has been really hard. And I hadn't realised until things started to feel a little bit more normal how worried that had made me. It's only really with hindsight thinking, actually, that was really bad.
Yeah.
And those experiences aren't normal. And it was only when I started to kind of fall back into a slightly more normal routine that I realised how good that was and how much I enjoyed it and how much better I felt.
Yes. So, yeah, like you said, it's only when you start going back to normal-ish that you recognise how unnormal it's all been, how like really weird it's all been for like months, for a long time, and not just for us but for the patients too. Anyway, go on, what were you going to say?
What I was going to say is what I've really noticed is that the initial reaction from patients was that it was another thing that we were as a hospital that we were implementing, but actually over the last few months all of the patients have been fantastic in terms of just really understanding that it's just something that's happened to everybody, but it's taken a while for them to get there, I think, and for it not to feel like another restriction that we've imposed or that is related to their section, that it's actually just the way the world is at the minute. And I think it's taken us that amount of time to get used to it as well.
I would agree, yeah. I mean, like I said, just another, I can understand why they feel like that, because it's just another, oh yeah, great, here's another thing on top of everything else that's going to stop me from getting out or going home or whatever, even wear a mask and things like that, that they have to wear them now when they go outside. But I've had no patients been upset about it. They've kind of just gone on with it and gone, okay, that's just something I have to do.
I just want to go out.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I suppose like all of us. Anyway, well, that's episode one. So do you think you'll be back for episode two, Caroline?
Possibly. Possibly, yeah.
Well, honestly, thank you very much for joining me.
You're welcome.
And I will see you for episode two.
See you soon.
All right.